Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen. Joining me in studio right now are three folks from Michigan Tech, in fact, a team of social scientists who have been working on a tremendous project that I had a chance to preview about a year ago, and now it's live for the public to use. And what it is, they're going to tell you all about the details, but this is a thing called the Keweenaw Time Traveler, and it allows you to explore our history in a very fun and unique way. So let me introduce my guests right now, Don Lafrenier, John Arnold, and Sarah Scarlett. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thanks. Good morning.
All right, Keweenaw Time Traveler. Can somebody take me back to the beginning? Let's go back in time to when this idea first was hatched and how that happened.
Sure. So it all came together. Sarah and John and I kind of all have an affection for history, for geography, and really how things change, how environments change, how people, where people live, and what it was like, what Copper Country was like in the past. And so we kind of came, put our heads together and said, well, how could we do that in a way that would allow us to not only know what the past was like, but how it actually changed through time. And that's sort of how we came together.
Well, I know that I love walking past any of the old photographs that are posted just about anywhere you go, the city center, or if you go to the Calumet Visitor Center up there in the part of the Keweenaw National Historical Park or Historical National Park. Seeing the pictures of the streets and then trying to pick out landmarks and seeing how much things have changed. And it's just a fun pastime to do. So when I talked to you folks when, you know, a year ago when this was still being developed and you were looking for citizen historians at the time, I remember that, it was fascinating to see how, you know, to wait to, you know, I wanted to see this thing when it came to fruition. We talk about it as being a time traveler. Explain the relevance of that name. And don't be shy about it.
We're calling it a time traveler because, as you say, it's going to help people with an interest like yours who are interested in seeing sort of those old photographs and trying to figure out how does this relate to the landscape that I know, to the buildings and the towns that I know. This, we're hoping, will help them. So we'll be able to go back and look at old maps and be able to look at one place and how it changed on old maps from, you know, sort of five-year intervals, excuse me, to see, you know, so that if you're looking at a photograph and it's not quite the way it is today, you can maybe go back and find out how it changed and when it was from.
Well, it sounds like it had to have been a long process, very deep, very involved. How did the process go? Okay, so you have the idea that you want to be able to do this. Of course, then you need data and you need funding. How did it all come together?
Yeah, so it first started with some seed funding from Michigan Tech that allowed us to be able to go out, make some connections with our local heritage partners, such as the Keweenaw National Historical Park, Isle Royale National Park, the Carnegie Museum, the various historical societies of the region, and to be able to see what the extent of their map collections were. So how many maps do we have, and what kind of condition are they in, and would we be able to digitally scan them? So these are historic, you know, some of these are 120, 30, 40-year-old documents, and are they in a condition where we can digitally preserve them? And so we started doing that and did a sort of proof of concept and got them scanned and figured out a way of doing that that was going to protect the documents, but also get us a high enough resolution of a scan that we can use it. And then we put our heads together and met over lots of donuts and coffee in July of, I guess it was 2 years ago now.
Somehow.
To put together an application to the National Endowment for the Humanities, looking for a grant that would allow us to do all of the maps that we could find in the region, as well as all the other sources, such as mining records and city directories and censuses and all the other material that's now in the Time Traveler.
Are all three of you faculty at Michigan Tech?
I'm faculty of professor of geography.
Right, and I'm an assistant professor of history.
And I'm a PhD candidate in industrial heritage and archaeology.
Okay.
Luckily, roped in at the right time into this project.
How much involvement were your students in this?
Huge, I think, would be a pretty good answer.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, we've got four graduate students, all from the Industrial Archaeology and Heritage Program, as well as we've had as many as 17 undergraduate students from history and anthropology to computer science, geologic engineering, psychology. So it's a really big interdisciplinary team from across campus.
Now, as I mentioned at the onset here, you at the time that we were talking, you were looking for people to help citizen historians to give you some data, to give you, you know, if they had old pictures, whatever they might be able to provide. How was that effort? Were you able to get a lot of stuff?
We are, and it is ongoing. It's actually the one of the most important and exciting parts of the Time Traveler is that we built it to change and grow. Right, we've put in some information, maps, censuses, city directories, but what we really want is for people out there to use it and add what they know. And as you say, it can be memories, it can be information that they've collected, it can be photographs. So what people can do is get on the Time Traveler, explore a little bit, and then mark a point on a historic map and say, hey, I know something about this place. So maybe it's your grandmother's house and you have an old photograph, or you know something, or you just have a great memory about going to that house as a child and the good family times you had there or something. So you can share those stories. So part of what we're trying to do here is learn about how a tool like this can be used sort of for communities and their heritage, right? Here in the Copper Country, this is a place where people really care a lot about the history. And it's also part of our economy, right? Tourists come here in part to learn about the mining history, or maybe learn more about the immigrant communities and the patterns here. And so we hope that the QAnon Time Traveler will be a way for people to learn more about their history, to talk with other people more about it, to make it part of their daily lives, and also see how we can encourage people to think about history in exciting and more engaged ways.
Well, that's a pretty neat interactive way for the public to be involved with this.
Exactly.
To be able to add to the richness of the history. But how do you vet what the information they provide? I mean, it could end up being a Wikipedia type of history where, you know, how do you know if somebody says, hey, I was there and they weren't?
Right. That's a really good question. We've gotten quite a few questions about that. In part, you know, we have stuff built in, so if people put up stuff that's offensive or really obviously wrong, we can take it down. But it's really a place for people to share what they know, and if it doesn't seem right or someone has a different kind of story, then they share that story and we start a conversation.
How many locations, because this is basically location based, true, right? If you're, if you want to find out, let me ask for clarification then. Is it location based, or if I wanted to find out about Big Annie? You know, how do I find out about her if she's not a place to dial down on a map?
Part of what we've constructed is a searchable interface, so by place, by time, and by people. So we'll have search boxes. We have search boxes in place where you could type in Big Annie, and any mention of Big Annie comes up, and that each instance is located on a map. So if she did a number of important things in a number of important locations, all of those come up for you to explore.
Oh, okay.
And you'd get, if you typed in Big Annie, you might get other comments that other users had made about their, information they know about Big Annie. But obviously, you could also type in her whole name and try to find out where she lived, because then that would match maybe the census records or the city directory records, which obviously would have her first name and last name rather than Big Annie specifically. So that way you can search some of those sort of official municipal records, but also things that other people have added. So that's how we're hoping some of that conversation will go for our citizen historians.
And then how exhaustive does the history stretch out? Like, if I, you probably wouldn't, unless I live somewhere famous, you won't be able to find the history of my own house then, right?
Well, you might be able to find some of it. So some of the maps that we're using are called Sanborn Fire Insurance maps, which were made, we have them from the 1880s up to about 1949. And they were covering most of the towns up here. And on those, you can actually see the what we call footprint of a house, basically the outline as if you're looking from above. And so you can see how that changed. So it wouldn't So in that way, you'd be able to see the history of your house. Oh, look, someone put on a porch in 1925, or, you know, they added on the new kitchen, and, oh, they built a garage, right? That, so you can actually see that kind of history. So, and then in areas outside of town, we don't get as much detail because those maps didn't cover some of the more rural areas, but we do have historical topographical maps, which often have little dots or squares for buildings. You can't learn quite as much, but you can still get a good sense.
But you can see tree cover, for example, out in the rural areas. Or you can see when something's being farmed, and often we have notations about farming, or maybe drainage ditches that were added. So you can still get some information about some of those rural areas. What I also think is really exciting about how you can see the buildings change, you also see the population change. Mm-hmm. You can see who used to live in your house, who used to live next door, if they had maybe boarders or roomers that would live in the house previously. And that may help you understand why certain things may have changed.
Extra bathrooms.
That type of thing, exactly.
Yeah, I don't know much about the history of the house that I'm living in now in Calumet, but the one prior to that in Lorium had a ton of history that, you know, we would hear about in certain neighbors that had lived on the street all their lives, and how, you know, both the bathrooms, they had an upstairs and a downstairs bathroom, were relatively new, that there used to be a, you know, basically a commode in the basement, and mm-hmm. that's all there was, mm-hmm. and that was common back in the mm-hmm. time, that there was no dividers in the upstairs floor, that it was one large building because there were just a whole bunch of beds, mm-hmm. you know, that people would sleep up there. And, of course, now they had a bathroom and multiple bedrooms and stuff. Well, none of that had been there. It had all been one open spot. That there were rooms that were built in the first floor that didn't exist, you know, at one time. And we had what we called the cedar room, and it was great for hanging stuff. It was a big closet. Comes to find out that cedar room was the sauna that was part of the house, you know. Right. And then outside there were stones that led to nothing. You know, they just went out to the yard, and then all of a sudden there was just nothing there. Mm-hmm. And it'd be nice to have known, you know, nobody knew what was there at one point. But at some point, when they built the house or sometime after, somebody decided to put a decorative stone footpath leading out to something.
Right. One of the really neat things about the way we structured this project is that we're not limited. We're only limited by what information is brought to bear, right? So it can continue to grow, as Sarah pointed out. We have plans of stone footpath leading somewhere, and someone later comes along and says, oh, I know what used to be there. We can contribute that to the database, and it just continues to grow over time.
Some of the things that have changed so dramatically, I would love to see it, you know, I'd love to travel back in time, as we're discussing here with the Keweenaw Time Traveler program. You know, I read about how back in the heyday of the mining time was, they practically had clear cut the area, that there were no trees. You know, most of the trees that are here, they're newer than mining, because they were gone.
Absolutely.
They took them all down. And so some of those pictures of the hillside on Hancock, perfectly bare across of it, can't even fathom it, you know, now. The presence of rail, you know, of course, with Calumet Township picking up the old depot up in Calumet. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of like in the forefront, because now people are remembering, oh, yeah, they remember those trains that used to come, you know, every single day. And so just seeing, you know, some of the, you know, what they're basically now snowmobile paths or something now. So, yeah, that used to be where the railroad came through. Just so see some of those things brought back to life, I just would find so fascinating.
We had an experience last summer where we, as part of a different project, we have some local high school students who have been working with us from Calumet High and Houghton High and Dollar Bay as well, who have been working with us to help get some of the basic information into the Time Traveler. And one activity we do with them is we take the Time Traveler data, load it up on phones and iPads, go out walking around the neighborhoods that they're familiar with, the places that they play and commute to school with every day. And they get to actually see why these footpaths used to be rail lines, and why is there this cut through between these particular houses, or why does this old building look like a factory but now it's a restaurant or something like that. And so last time we went out, for example, we went out and looked around in the park in Lake Linden and saw how that used to be part of Kaiman Hecla's industrial complex along Porch Lake there. And I think that they knew that that was the case, but to actually experience it and stand on top of footprints of old buildings and realize that, that the environment they look at around them has changed so much. And now they can do that in a data, in sort of a big data way, and have that. And anybody can do that now that the time travelers available.
It's too bad the program can't work in reverse, where you can go back and tell one of these workers who are showing up at the smelter and say, you know, one day they're going to build a playground here.
That's right.
I know, right? That would blow their minds.
Sarah, you had mentioned about the rural areas, and that's, you know, even more so, I guess, because there's a lot of history preserved in the main cities or towns. But when you look at something like Boston location, or you just get out to, you know, some of the, you know, Phoenix and those places, that at one point had a population of their own. I went out to the Jacobsville Lighthouse one day, and the guy out told me, out, you know, said that, well, at one point there were 800 residents who lived here when the quarry was operational. And I just find that, you know, fascinating, because, you know, you drive through those areas and there might be a foundation left of something that is long gone. But at one point, you know, there were enough people for that town to have its own store and its own church and, you know, its own, you know, sort of center of commerce.
Yeah, absolutely. And we are really eager to hear stories about those places, especially because it can, you know, that's one of those exciting ways to see change, the way Don was just talking about. You know, exactly, if you're walking through, if you're on a hike or something and you run across some ruins, people want to know what that is, you know. Locals want to know, and so do tourists, right? That's partly why people have a good are excited to come here. And so if they could then go on the Time Traveler and look right around that spot and see that someone had added their memory or knowledge about that place and could learn, oh, now I know what that was, whether it was a house or a part of an industrial mining complex. So yeah, we're really excited to ask people to tell us what they know about places that might, you know, that aren't as populated today, but have great stories to tell.
Some of the, you know, the history that's really good here too, it isn't all dating going back 100 years, because, you know, I've lived in the area for about 6 years now. So even when I hear somebody say that they, you know, as kids, they used to go to the McDonald's in downtown Houghton, you know, or that, you know, that, you know, we're having a new Burger King open up here in the business district of Houghton, and say, oh yeah, well, the business, you know, there used to be a Burger King over on the other end of town where the statue is, and that side is, oh wow, that's interesting. Or even there was a video released not too long ago from MDOT which showed the construction of the Portage Lake Lift Bridge, right, and some of the shots of the city from the 1950s there, which is fascinating to me. So it's not, you know, not necessarily having to go back to, you know, the black and white days of the mining, but even just going back 10, 20, 30 or 40 years to, you know, when my dad used to come up to the copper country as a child to spend time with his grandfather, you know, that era. Pretty fascinating.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, we unfortunately recently lost another building in downtown Houghton on Sheldon, and there were contributions being made to the Time Traveler at the time that building was on fire, and now we have that as a record, for example, of something that even just happened a couple of months ago. And so absolutely, we're looking for contributions in that way as well. Tell us what it was like when you were living here in the 1990s.
Yes, especially since, you know, as you say, a lot of the history does concentrate on the 100 years ago and the mining, but there's so many great stories and memories and information, as you say, about more recent time. And, you know, unfortunately, as elderly parts of our community are no longer with us, we're hoping that this can be an opportunity for them to share what they know. So we can get more recent stories, because that's all going to be, you know, that's all history now. It's going to be really interesting to people now and down the road. So we do really hope to get slightly more recent history, as you say, too.
Well, as time goes on, even today will be history.
Right.
Will you be looking at, you know, building up, you know, upon this as in the, I guess, the decades to come? Of course, technology will change, and you know, who knows? Maybe this will be a 3D interactive model at some point when your, you know, your students are designing it 20 years from now. But you're nodding your head.
Well,
so is that planned?
Interesting. You should say that. Yes, we've been doing some research into 3D. Modeling with pretty high degree of accuracy, some of the communities for which we have the most relevant data. It's been very successful. It's not part of the public launch yet, but it's pretty dang cool.
Yeah, okay. I think John's being a little modest. I think recently he was working on something and was able to model about 45,000 buildings with some degree of accuracy fairly quickly. And I to lead on your point, this was built to be very flexible, to be additive, that we can add things to it over time, that we can, as new questions, new ideas come forward from the public or from other researchers, that we can build upon this. And so this is just the beginning. We focused sort of on the sort of heyday of Copper Country history, but we're really looking to bring this to expand it both in geographic scope and in time scope. We can go back before European settlement, or we can come right up to yesterday.
We've hopefully created a urging by in the minds of the listeners of this program to run out and try this thing out. How do they do that?
Well, they can go to our website. So it's www.qanawhistory.com. And there are a few different ways that people can interact. There are a few different apps, we call them. So one of them is an Explore app where you can explore all of these places and share the information that you have. So that's the most straightforward way to do it.
In addition to that, we have a good presence on Facebook. You can find us on Facebook for QAnon History, on Facebook, on Twitter. And then in addition to those apps right now, I guess our call to listeners would be to help us improve the Time Traveler. And we're doing that by asking the public to come and contribute information and help us transcribe information on historic maps that the computers can't read, and to help classify the way buildings were used and what they were made out of. And so we've got some apps on our website to do that. And we hope that they're fun and interactive for people to work with. But that's sort of our efforts right now, is trying to get everybody to come out, help contribute to make the Time Traveler even better.
With a couple minutes left to go before the end of our segment, I was saving this question for the last. All right. After going through all of this over the last couple of years and digging through all this data, did you find out anything that nobody else knew that just was so fascinating about the area that was really, really kind of cool? We're not giving people another teaser here.
Where to begin, right? I mean, there's probably so, so many cool things, many tiny things, right? For me, the probably the neatest thing to see was how tightly knit and tethered all of these communities were to one another and to the landscape. You know, if you're biking through the woods, which I do, you find a ruin. What is this and why is it here? And when you look back 100 years ago, suddenly it all makes sense. You can see how everything was connected to each other. It's fascinating.
I have a personal story. So I happen to live up in Boston location and knew that there were the Franklin Mine and Franklin Jr. Mine were up there, and they're pretty obvious still on the landscape today. You know, exploring around with my children in the backyard, in and around Boston Pond, you know, we would find these old rail grades, and well, I now know they are rail grades thanks to the Time Traveler, but we found these connections in the landscape that now I can understand, and I can teach my children about it. I can walk around and explain to them how this connected to the mine that's down the street, and how this would have connected to what now looks like a snowmobile trail, but actually used to be the streetcar line that ran right in front of our house. And so for me, it was and I'm fairly new to the community as well. It was an opportunity for me to now really understand how this landscape, how the places we live now has changed and been affected by all the histories in the region over time.
Sarah, don't have one?
It's hard to choose. I've been studying the region for a while, and so there are some of these maps that I had been looking at before they got into the Time Traveler, but what's most helpful is, for me as a historian, so I study the I study housing and the way that people decide to live where they do. And so what, and I spent a lot of time in, before this was around, sort of making little maps myself by hand and marking where people lived and when they moved where and why. And it took a really long time and it was hard to see. And I'm excited about this because it lets me, lets me see all that a lot more easily, a lot faster, and I can follow people. I'll be able to say, okay, here's this person. I'm sorry, I'm not coming up with a good example. Let's say William Hodgson, right? He lived on College Avenue. I've been studying College Avenue. And I can type his name in and see where he lived in 1890, and then see where he lived in 1920 or even in the years in between there, and try to figure out why. And it just lets me put together stories so much faster to sort of start asking better, bigger questions.
Well, it's definitely fascinating. I can't wait to try it out. Their history is more than just locations and mining. It's about the people and learning more about the people and how they lived and how they experienced this area. Helps us understand, you know, about not only about our own history, but also, you know, helps us with, you know, moving on into the future. And so encourage people to try out the Keweenaw Time Traveler. Thanks so much for coming on the program.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Rick.
Copper Country Today, we'll be right back.